it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day? Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. And I missed the pod after we played Atlanta. That was a game that really stood out to me, and I've been looking forward to talking to y'all about it. Now, Atlanta is not a very good team, right? They're, without Trae Young, they're not very good on defense normally anyway, although I think they were like eighth on defense coming into that game post-All-Star break and playing with a lot of spirit. I love Jalen Johnson, super fun player to watch. He had some great plays in that game. But what really stood out to me in that game, guys, was how athletic LeBron and AD looked collectively in that game. I thought in terms of their individual athleticism, it was their most athletic game. And that's something that, above all else, right, we've talked recently a lot about on-ball shot creation and things like that. And these things are certainly tied together. But in terms of where LeBron and AD's historical dominance has started, it's that they are massive human beings who are really athletic for their size, D. And over the course of 82, they don't always leverage it. LeBron is the oldest player in the league. AD, you know, carrying so much of the defensive load and has had various leg injuries and whatnot, as has LeBron. But LeBron made some comment, forgive me, I'm not quoting him directly, but it was something like, it's go time, right? We're at that point of the season where it's really time to turn it up. And I think it really changes the dynamic of the team if that's the version that he can reach, right? I've been looking for games where LeBron specifically can look especially athletic rather than just kind of plowing through guys, which I think has been the story of a lot of games. Now, it's a totally different beast, D, to go from dominating Atlanta and beating them off the dribble versus having to do that against Aaron Gordon, for example. But I was really encouraged by the level of athleticism that they played with. And I think that for all the talk that we've had about how small we've been, if they've got their motor revving really high and that it's go time, we're not in the playoffs, but we're in that playoff chase right now, and they've really turned it up. We've seen LeBron especially do this before, where he's got several different gears that he can hit. And that game in particular stood out to me from an athleticism standpoint. So curious your thoughts on that, D.
Yeah, me and Mike hit on this, but from a different angle, particularly with LeBron. And I was talking about it from the context of the league and their directives towards referees and what they were and were not going to call on the perimeter.
Like after the All-Star break versus before type thing? Yeah.
That coinciding with LeBron putting his foot on the pedal a little bit more, and how that can actually be helpful towards a player like LeBron. Like, if you're not going to call these little bumps on the perimeter, well, then guess what? I'm going to be even more physical out here. Mm-hmm. And it's like, Mike, we're children of a certain era of NBA basketball, and our fandom goes all the way back to the times where you could hand check. And if you listen to players from those eras talk about today's era, they always discuss how, well, I would love to play in today's era where you can't touch anyone. And the implication being that players of today might struggle in previous eras because of the physicality of those eras. And one of my arguments has always been that the physicality that exists in those eras, the most physical players from today's era would, and the best players from today's era would kill
absolutely
in those eras as well.
Absolutely.
And it's because their athleticism and their strength and their ability to get through contact would be just as good as those best players back then. And to Pete's point, Mike, about LeBron especially, his athleticism is combined with a certain amount of strength and angles and understanding of how to get to spots on the court. And if they're not going to call him shouldering a guy to knock him off or shedding a player in the same way that they're not going to call the freedom of movement fouls that they've called in the past. To me, that's an edge to LeBron. And it wasn't just against Atlanta. It was also against the Warriors. Mm-hmm. Like, he was shedding Andrew Wiggins and Jonathan Kuminga, and he was trying to muscle Draymond Green. And it's just like, these are things that LeBron, I think, it really favors him. I think it favors AD a little bit less. But also, if AD also understands, I'm not going to get this call, I think it will ultimately benefit him too, in terms of him being able to then play with a little bit more, like, I understand what's allowable in these instances. And I think it could end up helping him, even in a side way of him being like, I got to shoot my jumper a little bit more if I'm not going to get this call. And shooting his jumper more, I think, is going to open up more, like, more of his game. So it could be, by happenstance, we get a more diverse AD as well.
Yeah, AD was hitting his jumper against Atlanta. LeBron's been hitting his jumper all year. But LeBron and AD's athleticism at its peak has been the foundation of, I think, my LeBron and AD point, especially just focusing on the West for a second, because they haven't really lined up against every team in the East when everybody's been healthy the last couple of years. But this is the part of the Lakers where, outside of Denver, I have seen with my own eyes in person them take over Oklahoma City and, you know, Minnesota, although not this year to the same extent, that they were banged up. But the Clippers, New Orleans, on and on down the list, Phoenix, Dallas, Golden State, certainly. So the one team aside from that is Denver. And then the, as Pete started the podcast, I got frustrated all over again about the Sacramento game, because they did not take that game over athletically. And I guess where that's gotten me is that I don't know that you can depend, and the time is running out, certainly, like 13 games, upon that top level athleticism every night from them anymore. And what does that mean? What does that mean for the rest of this season? What, if, particularly if they miss the playoffs, what does that mean for next season, when the athleticism is going to wane at least a tiny bit more for LeBron? You know, we'll see about AD. And that, Pete, would be the question I would put back to you, because certainly when LeBron is the downhill force that he was against Atlanta, and he has been many times this year, it is very difficult to beat the Lakers. But you cannot count on that like you could in years past.
I think that's totally fair, and especially over the course of 82. And maybe this is just the optimist in me, I'm holding out hope that it's similar to previous LeBron seasons, where he's able to crank up to another gear in a way that he is reliable in that respect. And that, to me, is sort of, it has a chain reaction effect in that it gives the Lakers an elite primary on-ball guy that can beat his guy off the dribble in ways that he either couldn't or wasn't for the majority of the season. Like, even this year, like you said, there have been games where they've turned it up, but a lot of the way that LeBron has operated has been as an off-ball shooter or in the post or in these scenarios where it's not give the ball to LeBron and have him beat a guy off the dribble. And that's been something I've been concerned with all year, because he's in that old, you know, fight against Father Time, and Father Time being undefeated. He's taken Father Time the more rounds than anyone ever has, but at some point it's going to drop off to a point, and maybe we're already there. We will see, I think, against bigger and better type of teams. But I do think that it caught my eye in a way where it was like, oh, this is, I remember this guy. He was dancing with, even AD's, in AD's case too, that three that he hit, it wasn't just the hit that he hit a three. He was dancing with it beforehand. And that, to me, is one of the signs that AD's feeling good. Like, he was such a beautiful player in terms of fluidity and just his size. That's how he would cook those big guys, D, in the past, is that he would have the ball and it'd be side to side, behind his back, all these dribble moves, and then a sidestep, step back. And that's what that three that he hit looked like. It wasn't just a catch and shoot three. It was off the dribble, and he just laced it. It was nothing but net. And so there was just like a life and spirit to both of them that, again, I'm looking for rays of hope as we're in the 9-10 game right now, where it's like, hey, if they can turn it up to different levels athletically, I think it has a chain reaction effect on the rest of the team, including spaces like rebounding and a lot of the physicality aspects that we've been kind of yearning for throughout the season about playing bigger. for me, a big part of the play bigger argument has always been an 82-game argument, right? Where, okay, we can't rely on LeBron and AD to put their foot on the gas over the course of 82, and therefore we need bigger players on the floor to be able to get rebounds and do all the stuff that when they do have their foot on the gas, D, that they are actually very elite at. It's just unreasonable to ask them to carry that whole load all 82. In the last 13 games and going into the playoffs, this is that time where they can elevate, and I think that it just has a great effect on the rest of the team.
Yeah, so I wouldn't even call it hope for me. It's like either they will or they won't.
Sure.
And I'm going to believe that they will until they actually don't.
Amen.
So every season, LeBron and AD have shown up when the Lakers have been a playoff contender. Every season for the playoffs, they have shown up ready to kick someone's
That's
ass.
Right.
Every season.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not going to doubt that they'll be 16-game players when it's time to be 16-game players. And the 16-game player part of the season is here now.
Mm-hmm.
Based off of the standings and their want to try to get to eighth. And this is something that we talked about in the last pod. Phoenix is now in eighth, and they are the team that the Lakers have the best chance of actually passing. And I missed media availability yesterday, but I know that this came up about like the Lakers understanding that they have to manage things themselves first. But that there is this other understanding about what the teams around them are doing. And so let's go to break here, Mike, because I want to dive into this idea a little bit more. Not the standing stuff, because we've done that enough, but LeBron and AD and the push that they're trying to make.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
So, Mike, I, again, firmly believe that I'm going to trust in LeBron and AD until they show me that they're actually incapable of doing it over a long stretch. And I am not there yet with them. Being 82-game players, I think they need more support than ever in terms of the 82-game part of the season. But the playoff push, I still remain confident that they understand the stakes. LeBron, especially as a player who's won multiple championships and made many more runs to the finals, but even AD, who has always been a higher level playoff performer when you look at what his stats are. He's always been like, I'm ready for these big, big games. And so I trust in them, Mike, that they're going to be ready for this last stretch of the season. And I expect fewer of those quote unquote letdown games, which I think speaks to your point about like Sacramento should have been one of those games and it just wasn't. And so I'm treating that more as a one-off, but where are you at as them being the drivers? And also too, like, do you have any thoughts about the other players and their ability to similarly ramp up and meet the level that we're hoping LeBron and AD will get to as well?
Yeah, we did a bit on Austin last pod and about, you know, me wanting to buy up the remaining stock, but I still think that there's a level of that he's not going to just suddenly find new level of legs right now. So he is kind of following, you know, where AD and LeBron go. I think D'Lo as well. You know, Dinwiddie has been a player that's not been particularly aggressive, but on the flip side has done a lot of the little things, and that's been important. Rui has been aggressive, but mostly with his scoring, you know, so I don't see anybody sort of changing gears or shifting outside of what LeBron and AD can lead them towards. There isn't somebody coming in off the bench or around the corner. Vanderbilt is the one guy I think that still has a chance to come back, but we're in wait and see mode. He's not even practicing yet. So that's not something we can talk about in the immediate. So to get back to LeBron and AD, it wasn't just the Sacramento game to me in which that, like you talked about yesterday's media session and sort of the, you know, Darvin or some of the players acknowledging that it's go time. That same discussion was had pregame before the loss at Phoenix on the 25th. Same one was had before the first loss to Sacramento on March 6th. Then again against Sacramento on March 13th. And then again against Golden State. And they lost all four of those games within division, all of the teams that were directly ahead of them, all with the players specifically, whether it was AD or LeBron or Darvin, acknowledging the importance of those games. That, to me, is the difference between this year and last year. When they got their roster right and they started to make their push, they generally were coming out ahead in a lot of those matchups. Now, at the same time, in the other games, they basically won all of them. They've basically beaten everybody besides Denver within that context. The Clippers, even though it took the huge comeback. Washington, even though it went to OT. OKC, Milwaukee, Minnesota, and now Atlanta. So as they hit this stretch, maybe the one thing that I, if I'm trying to sort of go along with the narrative here, I shouldn't say the narrative, if I'm trying to kind of buy into what you started the podcast with, Pete, is maybe LeBron specifically and AD secondarily didn't quite push that button when I thought it needed to be pressed against those other teams. Maybe LeBron was kind of saying, yeah, you know, okay, but it's still the end of February. It's still March. You know, like maybe he now is able to kind of keep the foot to the level that it's at. And the Lakers would then have to rip off a stretch of going 10-3, you know, which is probably what it's going to take. We Darius and I had talked about maybe 9-4 if Phoenix slips up some, but that's because I just remain steadfast that the path out of 9-10 is so much more difficult even than the path out of 7-8. So that would be the concession that I would make, is that maybe they didn't press the button when I thought that they were going to press it.
I think that is my belief as well. And remember, in the Sacramento game, LeBron was sick as well, and so that contributes to it. This is something that, just in seeing how LeBron and AD played, that's basically the basis of my argument, is whatever they said pregame, whatever locker room speech they had and all that before the game, just how they actually looked on the floor. And again, playing an Atlanta team where it would have been very easy to be like, we can coast for three quarters and play 10 minutes of good basketball and win this game. And the Washington game that you were talking about, there have been several games this season that have fit that sort of template, and it would have been very easy to.
Well, and LeBron did turn it up in the Warriors game, no doubt. Yeah. It's just that AD got hurt, you know, and AD was great in his 12 minutes, so that would support that case. And now you've got, you know, Philly and Indiana coming up, so good further tests of that
for sure. And so that's I think that the Warriors game was actually a great example of that as well. Is that that's the only reason that game was close, was because LeBron was freaking awesome in that game, and so him hitting that level, I'm with Darius in that perspective of like, every time it gets to this point of the season, they are great. And so I'm going to believe in that until it's not there. Now, I do have more questions than ever, and it is something that I am watching closer than ever, D, and not if it doesn't happen, if they can't quite get there, I'm not going to be like, I didn't see this coming. But I do think that they do deserve that degree of benefit of the doubt. And so what is sort of the reaction, or what is sort of the chain reaction of that, D? Because when Mike was talking about, or like to your question of what are other role players that can step up, I agree with Mike that it's not really so much about that rather than it being appropriately slotting them. Right, where it's like, if LeBron can be still a high-level elite on-ball guy, then D'Lo and Austin is your secondary guys. You're in business, right? Whereas if D'Lo and Austin are kind of the guys responsible for running most on-ball possessions throughout games against really good teams, there's only so high of a level they're going to be able to hit. And so I just think that, and then on the defensive end, that's really where I think LeBron stepping up really matters the most, because we are small, but LeBron can really dominate the ground game defensively in ways that it's like LeBron kind of as that quarterback and AD flying around, grabbing rebounds and all that. And so talk to me a little bit about that, about the slotting and the impact of the defensive end. We talk so much about that on-ball creation, but what does LeBron and AD's defense kind of turning up a notch do for the rest of the team?
The point about the defense is how I sort of want to bridge this point from a previous thing I wanted to say, which is that just because I believe in LeBron and AD doesn't mean that they'll actually do it every single night.
Yes.
Like they're not infallible players. And so I actually think against the Kings, if LeBron wasn't 100%, then that explains some of it. But it was also on some nights, he's just not going to have
it. Of course.
As much. And 4 or 5 years ago, that just wasn't the case with LeBron or AD. They were more in their prime in terms of athletic ability, and they had more ability to do it night to night to night. And those players are mostly gone. And so that's the thing with being an 82-game player, like a 100-game player, right? And so we talk about the 82-game player or the 16-game player. Well, some players are 100-game players, right? So Giannis is like prime LeBron was a 100-game player. He would play a 100-game season every season. And he did that for like 9 straight years, going to all of those finals. And it's like unreal. But in terms of the defensive stuff, that's actually still where I have my biggest questions. I think LeBron is still going to pick and choose sub, especially during this stretch of the regular season where he's going to determine if he can be a dominant two-way player for his 35 minutes or if he needs to be a dominant two-way player for 10 minutes. And a dominant one-way player for 25 minutes, and then a regular player who can do off-ball work and just sort of, like, I don't want to say coast, but allocate more possessions to teammates for the other 10 minutes that he's on the court. For AD, I think this is where AD needs to shine the most and where AD needs to turn more of his attention to the defensive side of the ball. I think AD has been great this season on defense. I think he should make first team all defense. I also think, though, that the Lakers' struggles defensively have mostly been about the idea that he doesn't have the same amount of support that he needs to have. And so, Mike, in terms of the slotting, I do think that LeBron being good on defense and AD being great on defense is step one, but Austin and D'Lo and Rui, this is where they need to be like, hey, man, all the focus that we can put into doing the little things defensively, we need to do those things. And I think Austin is closer to that now than those other two players. And so I'm mostly looking for the support part of this. This is where I'm not looking at LeBron and AD as much, Pete and Mike. I'm looking more towards D'Lo and Rui and then the other players to be like, this is where our guys need the most support. And this is what's going to make our team the best team that we can be going into the playoffs is us doing this stuff. And we've seen D'Lo do some of it. We've seen Rui do some of it, but they haven't been doing it consistently at the level that is needed, in my opinion.
Let's take another break here and then turn our attention to those guys on the defensive end.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This, to me, is where the challenge of getting to having 13 games left and needing a certain amount of wins is so difficult. Because if you're asking Austin Reeves and Rui Hachimura to just specifically focus on a couple of elements of the game, and in this case, let's take Austin, and it's like, hey, defense has got to be your thing right now. You know, not and this is an exaggerated example, right? But we need X amount of charges drawn. We need you chasing guys around screens. You know, we need you doing all of that dirt, hitting the floor. Like, and that's a fair ask, by the way, of any NBA player by its coach, if that's what needs to be done. But it's more, it's less about like the ask and can you do it, but just the, can you do it against opponents that also have things that they want to accomplish. Like we're everything that we're talking about is this is what would be ideal for the Lakers. This is what the Lakers need. And well, the Sixers don't care about that. The Pacers don't care about that. They're going to go. Mm-hmm. And then only five of these games are at home. So you're now asking players to basically like play to their absolute best 13 times because there's no margin for error left because they haven't done that enough.
No.
Up to this point of the season. They just haven't. Or the rotations haven't been great. Or a couple of key guys have been injured. And all of that is fair. But at this point, it just is what it is. So I'm not disputing that Hachimura should be rebounding the basketball more. Forget making extra passes. Like, they joke around about that now. AD made a comment about it the other day about how, you know, what's up with Rui's uptick? And he's like, well, he's certainly not passing. But it works fine.
Yeah.
Because, like, with him being that aggressive and the defense is having to deal with it, great. Like, but I think what the coaches have said and that they definitely do need is that his presence on the back line, either from rim protection or cleaning the glass, or that stuff has to be there. And Reeves' defense, and I think D'Angelo with the swipe downs and those things that they've done well at times, they absolutely do need to be there at a higher level. I'm just trying to acknowledge the perspective of like how many times that these guys are going to be asked to do it. And if they don't do it, and by the way, they won't do it 13 times, then the Lakers will lose some of these games. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're so what's the level of balance? What's the expectation level that you can get from these guys is my question.
No, it's a great one. And we put ourselves in a dumb position, right? We shouldn't be in the position that we're in, and we can rehash all of that. But it, to me, speaks to a roster weakness where you're like, oh, if we only had Jared Vanderbilt, right, our defense would be this, this, and that. And that to me is like, when you look at our roster, like we just have more good offensive players than we have defensive players, but this is the position that we're in. And it is a matter of like, okay, well, what can you do? And I think you really hit on an important point, Mike, of like, be good at the things that you can be good at. D'Lo can get deflections. He can, and when he's really locked in on the defensive end, he can do that. But really our ability to sustain is going to be tell the story of this last part of the season. But I do think that LeBron and AD turning it up, kind of everybody follows that. And that's been just a nature of this team, D, throughout several years. And so I think that it can be good enough. Can it be 10-3 good enough? We'll see. But I like, we just don't have enough defensive guys, but I do think that there is improvement and there is something that they can reach a higher level than they're currently at.
I will say this too, is that Rui's been a pretty good playoff player in the few times that he's made the playoffs. And last year, I thought he locked in pretty well in what his asks were. He was not as good against the Warriors, but he was pretty good against mostly everyone. And I thought he was great against Memphis. Mostly just interested in, just like you said, these guys trying to keep their motor at a certain level over the course of these last 13 games. And to me, the guy who's been doing that a fair amount is Austin. We talked about this on the last pod, but Austin's asks, Pete, have been like, go guard the best dude on the other team. That's your responsibility. So it's De'Aaron Fox one night. When they play Philly, guess who Austin Reeves is going to guard? He's going to be on Tyrese Maxey. When they play the Pacers, guess who he's going to be on? He's going to be on Tyrese Halliburton. These are going to be his defensive assignments. Is he going to be great at defending these guys? No, but I want him to battle. And I want him to have the support of the other players around him to be locked in so that they can help him in the ways that he needs help within those matchups. And so I have felt like Austin's been doing his job. He's been doing the best that he can do. And when he gets the right support from AD and LeBron, which I expect over these last few games that he's going to get, I expect that they're going to be better on that side of the ball than they have been when it's been too many short closeouts. It's been too many hands down when they're defending the ball. And I'm talking everyone. Like, there was that clip that Lakers Social put out from practice, and the Lakers were doing a shell drill, and it was Max and Austin and LeBron, and they were all rotating, and they were just flying around the court. And there was that last little part where they were laughing, right? Because LeBron and AD both, or LeBron and Austin both converged on the coach who shot the jumper and they were, and they collided to a certain extent as both of them contested the jumper. Let's go. Exactly. There's a certain amount of let's take joy in that, in doing the work, Mike, that is going to have to be a part of this. And if they do take joy in those things, I do think that they will be better, even if they don't have all of the defensive talent that you would hope that they would have.
Yeah, it's curious. Well, not curious. It's it just everything fits into place on this roster if LeBron is at peak LeBron level. Because I don't think it's a LeBron and AD thing, because I think that AD has been largely very consistent this year. His jumper hasn't always gone in, but like he has been pretty much the same guy defensively, and at least to a degree. But the difference between a LeBron with the pedal down and a LeBron with the pedal off, and this is the whole existential question of the season that we talked about in the offseason. How often can a dude in year 21 still be that dude? And what do the Lakers have to get around that? And like, how much do the role players have to give? How much can Austin Reeves function without Jared Vanderbilt out there defensively? All of these different questions. But the thing to kind of where Pete started the podcast, the thing that does would allow for a run here would be LeBron being that guy every night. That is the margin for error, I think, that the Lakers have. And I just don't expect that anything other than LeBron being able to deliver that at least, I guess, 10 times before the play-in. Or, I guess, alternatively, if they are in the 10 spot, can LeBron do it twice in two Western Conference road arenas, even if it's against Steph and then Luka, or Steph and then Durant and Booker? I would say that is a possibility because he's LeBron James. It's just that much more difficult. That to me, though, Pete, is the bridge, and maybe I'm simplifying it too much, but that is just what I've watched throughout the biggest part of the season here, even acknowledging all of the different errors and mistakes that put the Lakers in that spot, that they needed LeBron to get to that point.
Pete, this is where I would say to you that AD may be the night-to-night best player on the team now, but LeBron James is still the leader. And what Mike is talking about is a certain amount of leadership, right? It is the, you will follow me based off of what I do. This is where they do need LeBron the most. And LeBron's been a leader his entire life, basically, as a basketball player, not just his NBA career, but even going before that. And I'm not sure there is a player who I trust more to be tuned in to what his team needs than LeBron in the most important moments. And we've seen him time after time after time answer the call for what's needed and do his best to take his team there. And honestly, if he's not able to do it anymore physically, then I would understand. But he has shown me enough this season that he is willing and he is able, when he calls on it, to do it most of the time. And so that's why I'm not just confident, I don't know, but I am hopeful that, yeah, like, I kind of expect that we'll see
it. A lot of truth is going to be revealed either way. And I, like you said earlier, they've always been there when it's come to this point of the season. And that defensive leadership, I think, is where it's really important. And so the conversation to me that I'd love to have in these last few minutes of the pod with you guys is, like, how can this team, in its current composition, looks like we're getting Cam back fairly soon, who is at least a guy who's got defensive talent and is better on defense than the other end. Now, what lineups he fits into and all that, there are questions to be had over that. But in terms of, like, what can the best defensive version of this team right now with the available guys be? And it really starts with the defensive leadership and capabilities of LeBron and AD. One of the downsides to this roster, the way that we have it, is aside from Jared Vanderbilt, LeBron and AD are your two most important defenders, and that can have bad implications over the course of 82. But when they are turned up on that end of the floor, Mike, OKC is a team that comes to mind as they're a team that's small, right? We've lamented the Lakers being small all year. But one of the ways that they're really good on the defensive end is that they can swarm. Now, they have better athletes than the Lakers do, but the Lakers are, I do think, can win the ground game in ways and have sort of that swarming LeBron and Austin converge, you know, like their hair's on fire on a coach shooting a jumper, that style of defense, because we're not going to be able to physically body a guy that's in front of us, but that ability to make your rotations to be mentally one step ahead so that you know you're locked into the play enough to where it's like, oh, the ball's about to swing to this next guy. And one thing that coaches, when they're on the practice floor with their teams, they're always talking about, do not react after the pass is made. React with the pass, right? That's the difference between good defense and bad defense. A lot of times it's like the ball gets passed and then you're like, oh crap, that guy has the ball. That's when you're reacting. When you're really locked in, you're following it. You're tracking the play. All these guys have been through all of these sequences so many times that when they're really mentally locked in, and we've got several really smart players that they know where that ball's going next and they can physically react to that. And so you can be a great defensive player with anticipation to a degree as well. And so I'd love to talk to you guys in these last couple of minutes about just what can the best version of this Lakers defensive team be on the defensive end. And I really think that that style of just sort of flying around, you can't do it for 82, but I do think we're at that point of the season.
Yeah, I think the first part of this is acknowledging that you can't count on somebody else coming back to fix this at this point of the season. And so I'm just removing Vanderbilt from this conversation. That doesn't mean he's not going to come back at some point at the end of this month. We really don't know that. And I just want to have the discussion of if he does, you know, what? Remember how long it took him to really ramp
right
up after his first injury? Like, there ain't no time for that. So I'm just going to stick with the guys that are playing right now. And the name that comes to mind is Jackson Hayes. And this, we had this conversation when Hayes first turned the corner of kind of figuring out how to play without fouling. And that's both in terms of screen setting and certainly when guys are coming at him, how to go vertical without putting his hands down. And he has largely figured that out. Now, against Atlanta, he was more than just the one shift player where he would, a couple of games, he was getting like 5 minutes or 7 minutes and they weren't going back to him in the second half. And it was like more Dinwiddie or more Prince or whatever. He played 17 minutes against Atlanta. He was only +3 in those minutes, I think for a couple of different reasons. One, just the starters were so good and they had pushed the lead so much that like when he came in for his shifts, it was more just like a little bit of basket trading. You know, it wasn't as serious of a portion of that game. But I just think that he's the one element off the bench that has real pop and real size and can make LeBron and AD feel some level of support, and AD specifically. So that's the thing that I've been trying to ask AD about and ask Darvin Ham about. Like, hey, what about this lineups when Hayes goes in at the end of the first quarter and the end of the third quarter instead of just the one shift with LeBron to start the second and the fourth quarter? So that's just one piece. I'm sure Darius has several others, but I do like the idea of using that on the offensive glass and transition, and he runs up and down, like he sprints like a gazelle. Like that stuff to me is going to be important for these final 13. So that's one guy who I think that with playing time can help the Lakers a little bit in that sense.
You guys know I've been advocating for Jackson Hayes for a minute now. And one of the places where I think we've struggled a bit is when he's in a one big lineup and it's LeBron and then there's a smaller three, right? And so this is the shift that starts the second and fourth quarters normally, where D, you've been pining for that group to have Rui in it as well. I do think that who plays the three in those groups is important, to where when Jackson is the only big on the floor and the rest of the guys out there are kind of small too, you have this kind of cascading effect of we don't have enough defensively. And so I'm curious, I know your thoughts to some degree.
Unless LeBron's really, really ramped up.
Yes.
That helps
for sure. But it definitely
even,
helps.
Even still, I'm with you. Yeah.
The LeBron, Rui, Hayes groups have been excellent all season, and they have not played as much of late because the Lakers have not had that extra forward in the rotation. I would like to see Rui come back into games earlier than what he does. He's been going out around the same time that LeBron goes out, and he is coming back much later, where Prince typically plays a longer shift than the shift that Rui plays. Now, Rui's getting more shifts, so he's playing more than Prince, but I would love to see Rui's minutes uptick some just to get like 2 minutes a half 2.5 minutes, a half, where him, LeBron, and Hayes are all on the court together.
One thing, too, that we've seen recently is that LeBron doesn't play the end of second quarters all that much, right? Where they're running a group where Rui's at the four, AD's at the five to kind of close the second quarter. Typically, you go back to your starters or your closers at that point, but LeBron hasn't always been closing those shifts.
That's right. And that's a way to steal some minutes, particularly if the flow of the game is going a certain way. Another player I'd like to bring up, Mike, is Max Christie, who played 22 minutes against the Hawks. Now, some of those were in garbage time, and Max decided he was going to go try to get some buckets and cook a little bit. But he played important defensive minutes. And if we're going to talk about the best defensive version of this team from the players who are currently available to play, Max Christie needs to be a part of that discussion, because he is the guard, I would say, who has the largest amount of variance of guys that he can defend, both as a wing defender, where he can capably guard some small forwards, and he can guard point guards and shooting guards. So I like him playing in these groups.
Just put this back in context with Maxey and Haliburton coming in for the next two, with like how much you'd like to see Max and when.
Cam too. Yep.
100%. And this is where the Lakers are going to need to piece some things together with their perimeter defense. And that's just the nature of how things are going to go with this version of the roster. If they had a completely healthy roster, I don't think we'd be talking about this much at all. I also think the Lakers would probably be in the top half of the league defensively and probably closer between like 7 and 12, right? But that's not what they are right now. To wrap this up, Pete, it does get back to LeBron. AD has been there. I think that the nature of this team, too, is still to play bigger and play more physical and leverage the strengths of the guys who are there in order to best support their guards who are not the most physical.
And we've talked so much about Jackson Hayes in this context that I would say, from his perspective, he's not slow at all. He actually helps our team's speed, too, right? So the idea that it's just a size thing, he's not a big, burly, slow-footed guy. He hauls ass and is really one of the guys that really catalyzes that.
Yeah, so Hayes running to support AD, Hayes and Rui together in a lineup to help support LeBron. There's like Hayes and AD together to help support groups that are Prince Austin or Prince D'Lo and like another guard, right? There's a lot of that I'd like to see more of in order to lean into the size that they do have available in the front court to, again, give them the best defensive support for all of those players and allow LeBron to be the best version of himself on both sides of the floor.
All right, we'll wrap up here. Got a game tomorrow. We'll preview that a little bit tomorrow. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
James has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound to Lonnie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two. One.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. For the victory.
It's over.
Shot clock now to five.
Bryant.
Yeah.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers.
The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.